are now tuned into the game.
Where evolution is revolution.
Welcome to another edition of the Game Recognized Game Podcast with RLJ and Kev. I'm KEV, that's RLJ, and we are the Gentlemen Advancing the Melanin Evolution, where evolution is revolution. Brother J, what the dilly, man?
It's just another day that the Lord has kept me. That's what the old folks used to say, Kev. And that's the space that I'm in now, man. It's another day.
Yeah, man.
God has kept me.
Black History Month is coming to a close. What's the blackest thing you done this month, man?
I can't say it. We can talk.
You say you can't say, man. Can't say. That's crazy.
Oh, you're not going to get me caught up.
That's crazy, man. That's crazy. Okay. Well, you know.
Just know I did it for Mandela.
Yeah, that's real. That's real, man. I guess the blackest thing I did that was kind of above board that I could discuss. But I've been watching the MLKX docuseries by way of National Geographic. It's on Disney Plus. And it's been pretty cool to watch, like, how MLK and Malcolm X became MLK and Malcolm X. It just shows, like, the younger version of themselves and kind of the build-up. And one of the pieces of the docuseries that it's not a documentary, but it's loosely based. But it's not fictional, but it's not autobiographical. Is that it? Is that a word? Autobiographical. Autobiographical. Yeah. But the dope part about it is, like, just kind of learning about their relationships with their wives. So with Coretta Scott King and with Betty Shabazz, man, it's like they really had, like, real OG partners in the struggle, man. They just weren't, like, housewives, man, like, cooking and cleaning and rearing the children, man. They was, like, about that action. But yeah, it took them to kind of get out their own way to, like, receive the support of their wives and to understand, like, they was legit partners in the struggle with them. And I thought that was kind of special.
I always peeped that, right? Like, and people don't really focus on or emphasize the sacrifices of Sister Betty Shabazz and Sister Coretta Scott King.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's some soul-seeking, gut-wrenching sacrificing.
Yeah.
That they had to exude, knowing that I got kids at the house. I'm getting rocks, bricks through my windows.
Molotov cocktails.
I don't know if when he leaves, I don't know if I'm going to see him alive again. Like, the toll that has to take on you is, bro, like, I watching all of the documentaries and then the shows that show a lot of or depict a lot of the historical events that has happened. I don't think we give honor or enough honor to the role that Sister Coretta Scott King and Sister Betty Shabazz played just as the wife. Yeah, they were activists in their own rights and they continued the legacy or the work of their husbands. But I don't think we really fully acknowledge and honor just the commitment that they had to the mission that their men signed up for, because I'm pretty sure none of them had this on their vision board.
Oh, hell no, nah, man.
Girls,
like that was the wild thing is one episode, Mrs. King and Dr. King, they're talking and they're not married yet. And mm-hmm. so they didn't want to go back to the South because, you know, Dr. King's from Georgia. Mrs. King, she was from Alabama. And so, like, they came from the rural South. They were like, nah, we ain't going back just because of the gym. They knew what it was, right? And so when they met in Boston, their plan was to stay in Boston. Like, Dr. King was going to get a job pastoring some church in the Boston area. But he couldn't get a job because they found out, like, his father was kind of controversial. And they were like, well, you know, we don't really need that kind of preaching in our churches up here, right? And so it was still kind of like a stigmatism put upon him just being a Southern preacher in general, and the fact that his father, they called it race preaching, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's this scene in one of the episodes where Coretta Scott King, she was a classically trained vocalist at the Boston Conservatory, right? And so she gets this part in this this performance. However, the performance is a touring performance that has to go through the rural South. And so she gets the main character role, but there's an asterisk by her name. And the asterisk means that, oh, whenever you're in a Southern city, you got to have your white counterpart fill in for you because you can't perform in those venues. But the wild thing, like in this tour, it was like most of the dates were in the South. Mm. Like she only had like maybe three main dates in the North, and most of the dates were in the South. So essentially she would have been riding the bench going through the South, even though she was supposed to be the star of the performance. And that was kind of discouraging. And then Dr. King actually gets a job pastoring a church in Alabama, but he kind of sees the Jim Crow down there, and like, and Montgomery's like, yo, this is some BS, you know what I'm saying? Like, I got to do something, right? And so they have this conversation, and he's like, well, I got this job down in Montgomery. I know you said we didn't want to go back down South, but I just feel like it's my call, and I feel like I need to do something. I can't stand here and not do anything. And yo, Mrs. King, man, she was a rider. She said, you're right. We got to do something, and we're going to do something together. And so we're going to go back down South and handle business. So they go back down South, they get married, and kind of the rest is history. You know what I mean? Yeah. But the joint was wild. Cause she was like, when you talk about riding a dime, that's the epitome of it, right?
Yeah. No matter the cost, right? And, like, just, I have always been amazed, even when history has put them in the shadows, just the cost of the sacrifice.
Yeah.
And then Dr. King was in his late 30s when he passed away. And so you're getting married to someone with the dream that this is going to be, like, we're going to grow old together. But your yes may negate that.
Yeah.
You're saying yes to something that's bigger than you may negate the dreams that you once had or your original plan. And that's heavy, bro. That's heavy. So, like, I know we're nearing the end of Black History Month, but I want to just give honor to the first ladies who soon became leading ladies.
Yeah, man. Whether it's Mrs. Evers, yeah, Mrs. Evers, Mrs. King,
all of them,
Sister Shabazz, those women, of the movement, like you said, they do oftentimes, they are placed in the shadows in many cases. And I'm just like, yo, in order to take on that stress, you need a strong partner. Yeah, man. I always envisioned I would have me a Coretta Scott King, man. But I don't know if it's in my cards, man. I don't know if it's in my cards.
It's not, and
I don't know.
I heard someone once say this, you know, that, you know, Dr. King had a large calling on his life. And I said, but why do we keep separating the two?
Right.
Because Sister Coretta Scott King's calling was just as, if not heavier, right? Because she had to continue to operate in her calling even after Dr. King was assassinated. And so I challenge individuals that say this, like, let's not minimize. We can't minimize.
Yeah.
Dr. King can have a calling, and so did Sister Coretta Scott King.
Yeah, man.
Like, two things can be true at once. And I think people are having a hard time accepting the fact that two things or three things can be true at the same time.
I think because we're programmed to, like, the patriarchal Western civilization way of looking at things, like, you know, this concept of deep-rooted masculinity that's like, yo, you know, the man, what the man says goes.
Mm-hmm.
It's his way or the highway.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's how America was kind of founded, based on making sure that the white man would always be on top, right? And so that kind of, you know, it, within that way of thinking, you're then also putting women in the background.
Yeah.
Just by the sheer nature of that kind of structure that's deeply rooted in religion, is deeply rooted in Western civilization. And that's really not how you know, we came up as a people, man. A lot of times it was the women that had to hold the house down and defend the house while the man was taken out of the household for whatever reason. You know what
yep.
I mean? And I had this conversation with a good friend of mine recently, and we were kind of talking about this concept of alpha men and alpha women. I was like, yo, it doesn't coexist. You know, you can't coexist. You can't have an alpha man and an alpha woman, or an alpha woman say, I want an alpha man. Okay, well, if you got an alpha man, then what are you? You can't have two alphas, right? You can't have two alphas. So that concept doesn't jive well with me. And we were just kind of talking about how did the concept or the premise of an alpha woman, especially when it comes to Black women, how did it come about?
Mm-hmm.
And my thing is, yo, like, Black women had to be strong out of necessity. A lot of times Black women had to be strong and kind of play the I guess, if you kind of look at gender role, the dominant role, out of necessity, because Black men are systematically taken out of the household, or you know, they had to assume roles that they didn't intend to assume, right? A lot of times it comes out of defense mechanisms of fear, or trying to find safety in an unstable, ambiguous environment. You know what I mean? I don't think sisters be choosing to take on all the roles. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I just don't believe that. I don't think that's the natural order of things. Like, sisters just say, yeah, I don't need a man. I can do whatever I want, when I want to do it, raise the kids, X, Y, and Z. Especially like when you talk about single women that are raising young men, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I don't think anybody asked for that. Like, I look at my own upbringing with my mother and my father. My father wasn't in the household or whatever. Like, my mom ain't asked to, like, raise me by herself. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It was out of necessity.
And I think that we could go so many directions with this, bro, but I think I said at a conference once that medicine in a prior day can sometimes be poison in the current day. And we started talking about how from slavery, the man was stripped away because that broke him. And it also broke her.
Yeah.
Because they needed, they had to grieve, so they couldn't really revolt because they were dealing with grief. And, you know, in The Making of a Slave, Willie Lynch's In the Making of a Slave, it talks about how the emotion and the necessity of emotional damage. If I take away the man that they have allegiance to, they'll eventually have allegiance to the only one true man figure that they're seeing, which in this case was normally seen as the slave master. And so if it starts there and women start to adapt and they start to get things done that need to be done for their families, that's where you raise, as they say, mothers raise their daughters and they baby their sons. And that goes back to, because I don't know how long I'm going to be able to be around you. And so I'm going to make her strong, because she may have to endure the same things I have to endure. And because I know what's waiting for you ahead, I want you to be strong, but I'm also going to take care of you as much as I can and nurture you as much as I can, because sooner or later, you're going to be taken from me. And I want you to be able to know that you were loved in this space and place that I had you, right? So then, as we transcend the generations, you got individuals who, like you said, I can do this by myself. So if you take someone who is now the newly formed alpha woman and put them in a space and place to be in relation with a man, there's some challenges there. Especially if the man has a very traditional way of thinking. And we talked about eons ago, we talked about the word submission, right? We talked about how people think submission is one-dimensional. And so right off the gate, if you start talking to an alpha woman or a young girl who's been raised to be independent and strong and do things for herself, you start talking about submission and you mean it in a way that basically says the man is superior and the woman is inferior, you're not going to get too far.
Hell no, you're not. Hell no, you're not. You know, so, you know the crazy part about that, though, what you just described, it's a woman that's in survival mode, but that survival mode comes from a place of trauma.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
But many people don't realize that they're in survival mode.
Yeah.
Because it has become habitual. And it was survival mode for my grandmother. My mother picked it up because she could see why it was. Mm-hmm. But now for me, I just know that this is how I was raised, but I haven't been connected to the trauma. So either you are directly influenced or you are indirectly influenced. And so you teach your daughter, and then you teach your daughter. I mean, and then your daughter teaches her daughter. And yep. The cycle continues, and you don't even know that you are forcing individuals to operate in overdrive to survive. And so, whereas it was survival back then, the medicine of yesterday can sometimes be the poison for today. And I don't think we as individuals and people, we think about what are some antiquated things that we are doing just for the sake of doing, right? Like yes, we're supposed to do X, Y, and Z. Even down to like the food that we're supposed to eat on certain holidays.
Mm-hmm.
There's one food, there's one item that I just can't, and that is a country ham.
Country ham, man, salt ham, man.
Bro. I tried it once and spit that shit out. Hey, and man, I looked.
Your blood pressure was 250 over 150.
For one bite, my nigga. Like
cholesterol I tried, was 300 off the rip.
My vision blurred. Feet heavy. Head spinning. Ever since I tried it, I looked at people sideways like, how are you eating that?
Man.
And then I remember I went somewhere and they were selling, it was a basketball game, and there was a group that was selling country ham sandwiches.
Mm.
Sold them things out, and I'm looking around like,
everybody mouth dry.
Dry. And I'm hearing people, man, this thing salty as hell, but it's good. I ain't had one of these in a while. You shouldn't. You shouldn't. This is why your name's in so many obituaries, because people has left your ass because they keep eating this country ham.
Gotta have country ham, man. Gotta have country ham and the glazed ham. All the hams.
The glazed, okay. But the country ham, bro, it tastes like you are eating a salt cake. Instead of a pancake, they are using salt with some binder and you're biting into it. Like,
oh, man.
It even smells salty. Mm-hmm. So I'm just like, how, like, what are you doing? So, like, the things of yesterday, the traditions and stuff, sometimes we got to dismiss those things, bro. Like, no, we not finna. There's some chitlins, right? People might revoke my black card for this. Here, I will willfully give it up. If it says I have to eat chitlins, I'm good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Chitlins is one of them things. It's like, if I ain't around it, it's like, it's not, it's out of sight, out of mind for me.
Bro, I don't allow them in my house. My cousin, this was years ago. My cousin said, I'm going to bring some chitlins. And I said, you going to bring them where? He's like, to the event. Bro, that's not, you're not bringing those to my house. No. He's like, I'll put them in the crock pot. So let me tell you something.
Yo, Brother Jay, you a new age Negro, man.
And fine. Call me a Nan. I don't care. And he brought the, I saw him pull up and I walked out front. He was grabbing the crock pot. I said, what's in that? He told me, I said, no, sir. These don't come in my house. You can serve them from your car because they were still hot. You know, a crock pot keeps things. You can serve them from your car. But anybody that eats them got the smell, bro, and it lingers. No. Mm-mm, not my house. I could put them on the deck. You can take them back to your damn house. People was laughing because they thought I was joking. Hey, my village, auntie, man, was laughing because she knew I was serious.
Don't bring chitlins to the kickback, all right?
Bro. Mm-mm. No. No. And so, like, funny. Once again, that was survival, right? We were given less, and we had to make the most of it. But the things of yesterday can be poison for today. Why are we still eating things like that?
I mean, honestly, man, I think because people define their truths, you know what I'm saying? Or their truth. People define their truth based on
lies.
Their lens or lies or perspective, right?
Yeah.
And so for example, you know, it's funny, we kind of talking about alpha women or what have you. And I was able to watch the Monique interview on Club Shay Shay. Mm-hmm. And we gotta recap some of that stuff. So I watched the Monique interview off the back of watching the Cat Williams interview on Club Shay Shay, which as you know now, the Cat Williams interview, I think, is at like 62 million views or something ridiculous.
1 million of those are mine because I have gone back and I have watched that episode, bits and pieces. Like, I know time marks. That's how many times I've gone back to see it, because First off, genius idea for Shannon Sharp.
Oh yeah, for sure.
The setup is dope. He's growing in his gift, right? Early on, he said, "Yo, I'm not a journalist. This ain't what I do. I talk." But he's starting to grow into the gift that he's been given. And, you know, many times your gift will make room for you. So even if you're not where you need to be, your gift will continue to make room for you so you can grow into it. So shout out to him for that.
Yeah.
Let's start with the Cat Williams. We're going to come to Monique, but let's start with the Cat Williams joke. So, Kevin.
Hey, man, I think he had a fifth before he even started, before they even hit the record button. But I don't know. I just think Cat one of them cats, man. He go.
So a lot of people were trying to, like, I think he was drunk. I think he was high. And I said, because we saw him in a space that wasn't what we are used to seeing him. Like, in movies, he's loud. On stage, he high pitch, he's screaming, and he cusses a lot. And I said, you do know people have stage presence and then they have like their normal lives, right? Like, they was like, yeah, I don't know, I wasn't liking it and blah, blah, blah. I said, so don't get so caught up in mess that you forget to pay attention to the message.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some things that he dropped that I had to hit pause on. And I said, I got to walk this one off. It was a lot happening, but what I will say, after you watch almost 3 hours of it, and then there were so many people that made responses, no one came out to say that what he said was untrue.
And because he said that, you know, this is the year of the truth, and, you know, you give people a safe space to come speak their truth. And, you know, obviously many people had problems and issues with what he said, but to your point, nobody said, yo, he's an MFing liar.
Nobody.
I've heard little slick comebacks and innuendos, or yeah, you know, some of it was true, most of it wasn't, blah, blah, blah. But I haven't heard any name that he mentioned come out and say, use a mofo liar.
And when I see you, it's me.
It's
and you.
On site. I ain't hear none of that, man.
Nobody from the responses that I forced myself to watch, because after a while, I'm just like, I'm not watching this.
Yeah.
Nobody said he was lying.
Nah.
And I remember someone told me once, I don't care who says it, but the truth will never change. And I thought about that. No matter how many ways it can be said, at the nucleus is the truth.
Yeah.
And it's not going to change. And I was like, well, started laughing. I said, well, shit, let me make sure I ain't never said nothing about Cat Williams, because he was emptying the chat. He was like, I'm going in the enemy's cave and I'm taking back everything that he stole from me.
Dude, Club Shay Shay is like the Aaron of grievances. Yo, you talk about platform and content. Like, nah, Club Shay Shay is the platform for the airing of grievances, man. And Cat came in that joint with 50 clips, all of them loaded to the brim.
Yes.
The safety was off.
and they only cut it because they were at the 3 hour mark. It's 60 million views, bro. 60 million. Like, how many views did the Super Bowl get?
Well, the Super Bowl at one time during the Super Bowl, I think they said it was 120 million total views that watched the live event, right? But to put that in context with this Cat Williams interview, think about some of your most popular sitcoms, right? And, you know, High to Heights, we're talking about The Cosby Show, The Martins, or whatever. You might get 15 million views a week. for an episode, and that's like a high watermark. So to put it in context, that like it's NBA games that don't get 60 million views. Super Bowl is like the biggest live event, live sporting event in all the world. You know what I mean? So that's a different context, but just think about that. 120 million views. This damn interview got half of that.
And it was just...
And that's the actual interview. That ain't all the cut-ups and the clippings. Yeah. Because I think between the way they sliced it up, cut it up, and like you said, they cut out certain pieces to promote it as individual content on IG and on Twitter and on YouTube. I want to say with the YouTube clippings alone, I think it's somewhere around 120 million views. With all like all combined as the amount of times that people have watched some segment of it.
And those two people.
Yeah.
For 3 hours sitting on the couch talking.
Yeah. I'm hating. I ain't gonna lie, I'm hating. Because we've been doing this podcast thing for a minute, man. I'm just like, damn.
I ain't even hating because Cat Williams. Like his story has never changed up.
Nah.
He's been who he was, who he is, and who he will be. It's been consistent. It's been consistent.
Some of it was outlandish, though. Like, yo, B, you 50 years old, man. You ain't running a 4-4-40, man. You just not. You just not. You just not. Let's just call it a let's just call that a buck. But you know, hey, you can overindulge. You can overindulge. You know, the 3,000 books a year kind of thing. I'm like, that might be a stretch, Cat. But I will say, I think he's very well read.
Oh, clearly.
You know what I'm saying? So you know, but I think just as an entertainer, as a comedian, you know, the truth is exaggerated a little bit for the punchline. You know, so I, you know, some of the stuff I'm like, I call BS on it, but I don't take away from the fact that he's highly intelligent, very well read, and I don't know, man. I took away from the joint like his methods might not be popular, but I think his heart is like in the right place, man. Like this whole concept of doing God's work. Because God was his friend. He believed, yeah. He always believed God was his friend. I was like, yo, that's heavy.
And when you think about it, bro, he has even said on different interviews, there's been situations that he has found himself in that he should not have made it out of.
Yeah.
And no matter how you look at it, the truth don't change. Going over to Sister Monique.
the alpha woman that kind of understood like, oh, I want to be married. So, and you know, the opinion of her relationship with her husband, Sidney, I believe that's his name. That's for people to decide. But at the same time, I like when we kind of talk about the alpha woman, I automatically thought of Monique because she kind of mentioned like she thought she was this alpha woman. And was the breadwinner and the X, Y, and Z, but it pretty much demolished her relationships. Like that survival mode from mm-hmm. past trauma, it demolished many of her relationships and the previous marriages, and even to a degree, you know, relationships with her children. As you can see, like that's been kind of some of the blowback from her interview. But the whole concept of your mm-hmm. truth. Is it true? Is it fact? If you stand on your truth, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's true. It may be true to you.
Yeah, and I remember when I first got into like the counseling therapy space, I heard someone say in an observation. She goes, well, there's here. I'm glad you all decided to come back for this session. And there's three things that we're going to get down to today. Your truth, and the truth. And I'm sitting in the session like, oh shit. And they was like, well, what's the difference? She said, the truth that you tell is going to be from your perspective. the truth that she tells is going to be from her perspective. And it's going to come through the filter in which we are currently using. So if you feel offended, you're going to have a filter on and you're going to point out all the things that made you offended, made you feel offended. If you feel as if you were done wrong, you're going to have the victim filter. So she said, however you see or choose to look at this, that is going to be the filter and the lens in which we see or we hear your truth. Am I saying that your truth didn't happen? No. But now after we both get to share our truths, then we can start to figure out what is the truth. And the truth is the thing that's never going to change. I can tell you all this happened and your back could have been to the action. Just because you didn't see it don't mean it didn't happen. And so now we're here to talk about the things that we didn't see or weren't aware of. And so when I was watching Monique, I was like, oh, this is it. This is a lot. There's a lot happening. And going back to the thing I said about Cat Williams, her story has been consistent.
Yeah, the story has been consistent. And as you can kind of tell, even, you know, Taraji P. Henson was a topic of that conversation and how she was talking about, you know, she'd been underpaid for different roles, et cetera. Like, it's Monique had been saying that. It check out. So and is it her truth or is that her perception? Nah, that's her truth. That's the truth.
Yeah, everyone is aware of the truth. And I think she said, basically, she's saying what I said, but she's saying it in a nicer way. She's asking for it, whereas I was demanding it. You gonna give X, Y, and Z this? And she ain't even have to ask for it? Why do I have to ask for it then? We doing the same thing. And sometimes the truth is easily received when it's presented in a way in which someone can accept. You yelling and making all this noise and making this big fuss and causing all this attention, chances are I'm not going to give you what you want that fast, if ever. But, oh, okay, you asking, we having a conversation, I may give you a little bit. Not a whole lot, because I still want to be in the position of power to where you think you need me. And that goes all the way back during cattle slavery times.
Yeah.
But what did you think about Monique's, bro?
I mean, honestly, man, I don't like the fact that she kind of made some of her relationships with her family public like that. Because then you got her older son, he on TikTok now, responding. And then they going back and forth with him. They going back and forth with him on Instagram lives or whatever, responding to him. Like, I don't like that piece of it. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you know, I appreciate the fact that Shannon gave her the platform to really articulate some of the hurt that she's felt and endured by show business. Ideally, that's what it came down to. Everything was some level of hurt that she experienced, whether it was from the Parker show doing Big Business and her not getting the residuals that you probably should get from a hit TV show, or the accolades, attention, and the monetary reward of being an Academy Award winning actor. And you're not being able to benefit from it because you put your foot down, people use that as an opportunity to kind of sully your name.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, accurate or not, put certain narratives out in the atmosphere to make people not want to work with you, and so therefore you lose money. So I could see why she was pissed, you know what I mean, with Tyler Perry or Oprah or whomever. But at the same time, I like the fact that she was genuine. I like the fact that she, you know, she really loves her husband. I think that's some real shit. You know, like people were kind of talking about this fake, or, you know, she paying him to be with her or what have you. But it seemed like she, whatever he's doing, whatever they have, she loves it. And she's, that's a safe space for her, right? Yeah. You know what I mean? But at the same time, at some point, how are you going to release that hurt to try to move on or move past it? But then you kind of got to think about the programming of it too, man. Like, Kat was genius because you get 60 million views on YouTube and then you go out on a tour. It's not a coincidence, I don't believe, that Monique's interview came right after that, and she's also now on tour with Kat Williams. Right? So on the sidebar, it's almost like I could see why Mike Williams throwing darts at Shannon Sharpe, and they beefing and making up at the All-Star game, because like, yo, that's free publicity to make money. And so I kind of, you know, I look at it with a level of cynicism as well. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, this is your truth, but you also putting out this truth to exchange it for something of monetary value. So how serious can I take you? However, what I took away from Monique's interview was that, damn, man, she's a hell of an artist. She's endured some pretty screwed up situations in show business. Unfortunately, because she's an outspoken, large Black woman. You know what I mean? Because that was like a topic that they were wrestling with. And I think that's jacked up. You know what I mean? And the fact that she has not necessarily been able to capitalize on all of her success early in her career, because it's not just Monique. There's a stigma for vocal Black women, large or small, that then becomes angry Black woman.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a stigma around it. Like, even if mm-hmm. you look at the DA down in Georgia, Fannie Willis, who, you know, created some of the turmoil currently. And for those of you that don't know, she's the lead prosecutor in the DA for 45's election interference trial down in Georgia. But it came out that she had a relationship with loosely, quote unquote, a subordinate or a team member, utilizing public funding to have said affair.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's to be determined. However, the fact that she put herself in that position, that's what I have a problem with. But at the same time, her defending herself and calling herself to the stand during this hearing, she came in hot. And white people don't like sisters that they know their shit. They gonna tell you about yourself. Like, Black brothers, we've been dealing with this shit all our lives. So it's like, yo, it ain't nothing to hear a sister tell you what's really on their mind and be unapologetic about it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But when you kind of look at the mainstream, like, that's a no-no. So then I could kind of see why Monique is in the situation that she's in, because you're in that industry, you're not supposed to speak up for what's right. You're not supposed to speak up for yourself or stand up for yourself. You're not supposed to be who you are. Right. And I think that's kind of what I took away from both Kat Williams' interview and Monique's interview, is the fact that in Hollywood, when it comes to Black people, many artists have to compromise themselves to a degree if they really want a level of success in the business.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's jacked up. It's unfair. But then I kind of look at it like, all right, well, y'all chose to be in this business too. Still don't make it right. You know? And so my big takeaway was like, damn, it's Monique's interview was definitely it was almost like a sociology case study for me. And that, like, you know, I'm saying it tongue in cheek, but yeah, it was almost like a sociology case study, because a lot of her grievances were around systems that are in play that are kind of designed to keep black women in particular, in a certain box. And therefore you feel like you're not getting your true value, therefore I'm not valuable, and that's BS. You know what I'm saying? It's programming.
Yeah, I there was a lot happened. There was a lot to unpack, and there has been a lot to unravel since the airing of her video. Someone asked me, they was like, "Do you think she's lying?" I was like, "I'm not in her sphere of influence or access to even say what I think." What I will say is, her story has been consistent. And the beautiful part was there were comedic portions in both interviews. But in Monique's, it was like, "Well, what did you hear?" And Shay was like, "Yeah, I heard him say it." She's like, "You look in your camera and you tell him right here. You look right here and you tell him what was on there." And so there were moments of lighthearted conversation, and then it was like, no, my brother, I got to hold you accountable now. I need you to say the thing that is uncomfortable, no matter how much your voice shakes, say it anyway, right? And so there was a lot of systems, like you said, that was pointed out that needed to be replaced. I won't even say repaired, just replaced. And so it did cause me to put some things into perspective. And know that the truth don't change.
No, the truth doesn't change. And I think people have their truth and they stand on their truth, air quotes, because they've been hurt in some form or fashion previously. And if the truth shall set you free, so shall the hurt be released.
Yeah.
You would hope so.
It's sad when you see individuals who, you know, are stating that they're standing on their truth. And it's even more challenging when you know that the truth that they're standing on is only a limited view,
yeah,
of the bigger picture.
Yeah. Like, their truth is their truth. My truth is my perception, right? And that's the wildest thing to me. It's kind of like, all right, well, like you said, it's your truth, and the truth.
Mm-hmm.
But people are looking at the truth from a certain lens.
Yeah.
But if you got to say I stand on my truth, then like you say, you're probably lying.
Why announce it? Just do it.
Real shit.
Just do it, right? And if you are the living example, people will be able to pick that up.
Yeah. Because, I mean, hey, man, no pun intended. Game recognized game, dude.
Facts. And it don't take all day to recognize.
It really don't. It don't. It really don't. It really don't. It really don't. It don't take all day, man. You know, and that's an honor of the show. But, yeah, game recognized game, man. I think, like you said, if the story remains consistent and it doesn't change, and I don't think people are just gonna lie. And then, like you said, if lies were told, ain't nobody come out and say you're an MF and liar outside of DL Hughley.
Facts.
Outside of DL Hughley, when Monique brought him up in the situation with that, and he so like I think DL was the only cat that really came out guns blazing, like you was an MF and liar. So and it is what it is. But I ain't hear nobody else that was mentioned come out and say that either one of them was inaccurate. which is crazy to me, because like I said, Club Shay Shay is like the Festivus airing of grievances, man. It's like, yo, you can, you sit on the couch and you drink that Shea by Le Portier. Yo, man, somebody getting aired out.
there's no other way. There's no other way.
But definitely shout out to Shannon Sharp, man. Like you said, I just appreciate his versatility, going from Hall of Fame athlete to sports analyst to, you know, his internet show that he kind of went out on his own after being fired from Fox and going through a slight career setback. Yo, he hot now. He up. By the tune of 90 million views on YouTube, dog.
His gift is making room for him. That's all I can say.
Hey man, well, I hope he can spread some of that love over here to the Game Recognized Game podcast, man, because we need it. Thank you. Let our gifts please make room for us. Please.
This is your servant's prayer.
Please, in honor of Black History Month, and I'm giving flowers to all the ancestors and angels and all the sisters and brothers that have come before us. We could get some of them blessings.
Make it rain on the roof, God.
Please.
In Jesus' name.
Let the church say.
That's how you seal it. You got to sit in Jesus' name. Seal that
Let
thing.
The church say, amen. Woo! On that note, you just witnessed another edition of the Game Recognized Game podcast with RLJ and Kev. I'm KEV, that's RLJ, and we are the gentleman advancing the melanin evolution, where evolution is revolution. And like he said, in Jesus' name, let this little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Until next time, be light.
Be light.